Bill!
Yes?
Bill, I'm hungry! I'm hungry!
Paul wants to go to Homestead, but for all you fans out there in cyber world, he's just adamant about recording a podcast, despite the fact that he's famished.
Pretty hungry here. And I remember that guy, he said that they have pie there.
That's right.
We didn't get it last time because I was like, you know, full and stuff.
Huckleberry pie.
They've got blueberry pie. They only have huckleberry pie in season, but they have huckleberry milkshakes.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, I probably shouldn't eat the dairy and stuff, but still.
That huckleberry milkshake is tasty.
Man, that was so good.
That was
all right. So, all right, we're sitting here. We're at your property. We're looking around. We've kind of run over some rough ideas for your property. What's been the thing I've emphasized about 40 times so far?
The berm.
The berm.
Creating a berm.
The berm would be important.
Yeah.
And what is the primary function of this berm for you?
Well, in my case, some people might say it's a hugel culture or no irrigation, but in my case, it's to block noise from the highway.
Right, because you have a sweet piece of property that's right on the lake. Actually, if you consider, like, there's a few houses here, but one's your folks' house and one's yours, and if you consider this long strip, one is, like, right on the lake, and this other one's a little closer to the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing is, and boy, aren't we fortunate, as we're here having a little bit of a visit.
It's dead silent.
I thought, you know what would be funny is to stand up here while you're planting this tree, and I'll turn on the recording, and then all these semi-trucks will go by and demonstrate the value that this berm will provide.
I hear one coming at the distance. I think you're going to be satiated.
Okay, all right. So anyway, the idea is that this berm will provide a little bit of a barrier between just a little teeny tiny car. That's all it is. Tiny car. And there's wind. There's lots of wind right now. But to provide a little, I think that there's enough sound from that. When I come to a property, usually one of the first things I think of is, like, how can this land be more of a sanctuary? Now,
right.
Now my thinking is that you'll rent a track hoe for like a day.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a bunch of fruit trees already planted here.
Right.
But with a giant sized track hoe, you'll be able to pluck up, because all these fruit trees are transplanted fruit trees anyway. You're not going to get any of the taproot loveliness that you would otherwise get if you started from seed.
Right.
So my thinking is that you're going to be able to pluck all these trees out, pull all the topsoil aside, spend one day building a freaky big berm, and probably for here, probably something to the tune of 12 to 15 feet tall.
Maybe like as high as that tree right there. About as high as that bush or something right here.
This little bush right here?
Yeah.
Probably doesn't need to be quite that high.
Uh-huh.
So that bush, I mean, it's because there's like a little bit of a dip right here.
Yeah.
And so if you're building a flush to where we're talking about, probably 10 feet would probably do it.
Right.
Because basically, you know, it needs to kind of go a little higher than the height of the semi-trucks.
Right. Our property kind of gently slopes down towards the lake, so the house is actually lower than where we're standing right now.
Right. Usually the lake feature is lower than the house. Usually.
Except in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be between the house, if you're going to be between the lake and the highway, there's going to be that slope from the highway down to the lake. I think, but maybe I'm wrong. You know,
no, I think it's the same.
Just an observation, maybe.
No, you're right.
Typical thing. So it is amazing. I remember when Sepp Holzer was last here. He had this enormous track hoe at work building hugel culture beds that were really big, and I got a phone call, and it's like I could not hear a fucking thing on this phone call because the track hoe was just so loud.
Right.
And I walked to the other side of a hugel culture bed, And it was instantly, suddenly
quiet.
I mean, I could even whisper.
Oh, that's interesting.
I could whisper to be heard. I could clearly hear that the volume was way too loud on my phone. it eliminated probably 95% of the sound. And so a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to plant a whole bunch of trees and shrubs and stuff like that. And it's like, boy, they just don't cut the sound.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, I know that, like, with the Great Falls podcast, I made some comments about the wind problems that they have. And there are some concerns. I realized later I should have mentioned it. But there are some concerns about how the wind will move across the land based on a berm or a bunch of trees and shrubs. And it is possible that the wind will kind of do this special effect where it kind of does a little loop-de-loop down onto the property as it's going by.
Right.
But the thing is that if you've got enough texture to the land, then the loop-de-loop doesn't form.
Is that loop-de-loop kind of like a wave, like a crashing wave in the ocean, sort of that barrel, you know, where it comes over the top and then sort of swirls? Is that what you mean, or...? You're talking about something a little different.
So I love the interpretive dance that came with your description and all, but...
Can you surf that way?
can you surf it? Oh, yeah, no. I don't think so. All right. Now we're getting more traffic going by. I think if you had this berm, I would think that your house, which is this, you know, yay close. I mean, how much, from the edge of the highway down to the house, I think we're talking about 200 yards. What do you think?
Yeah, to the first place, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe 150, yeah.
And so, you know, because you can hear the highway and see the highway, and when you're outside working and playing in your garden and enjoying your garden, you can hear the cars on the road. I think that degrades the value of the property a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you add the berm in, that you'll probably spend like $1,000 on the track hoe to do this, to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that the value add to the property could be 10 to 30 times greater than that. I mean, you know, you know more about the real estate values in this area and this property and whatnot. I mean, what would be your estimate?
I think that's probably pretty accurate, just by blocking out that sound, and as we talked about the other day, also having the potential of even putting a root cellar within the berm, so now you've got sound reduction, but now you've got extra food storage that's easy to construct because you're already making a berm anyway. There.
Yeah, I like the idea of the root cellar in the berm. I think that's a great idea. Let's wander down to that tree that you want to ask me some questions about. And while we're wandering down there, we can still kind of talk about the berm. I think that the berm is going to be, in fact, I think that the thing to do, and I'm a big fan of, like, one of the problems a lot of homesteaders face is nosy neighbors that are up to no good.
Fortunately, we do not have that problem.
Okay, all right.
Our neighbors are awesome. We're friends with all of them.
Well, you know, you've got these folks driving by here on the highway. Some of those people are not your neighbors, but they might be bored. And
with these raspberries here, before you gave me the berm idea, we were trying to kind of just create a wall of foliage to kind of block that sound and that noise and the visual. And the thought was these raspberries would form a nice hedge, kind of be deer resistant a little bit. But I love your idea because you could still do that, but just have it on top of the berm or on the other side of the berm, and you get the double effect of.
Well, okay, so like next to the highway, the dominant feature next to the highway of most properties is conifer trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think you need to do is with your berm is that on the berm, side of the berm that faces the highway, I think conifer trees, you know, nothing to see here.
Right.
Boring. Keep driving right on by.
Right.
So that way you don't get anybody like, if they see that you've got a whole shit ton of food or whatever out at this way. I mean, first of all, there's going to be a little bit more pollution on the highway side.
Right.
And then the other thing is, it just seems to me like some people, they see something interesting and cool, they want to slow down and look, and then next thing you know, someone comes up with the idea of like, hey, that thing right there is something that they aren't supposed to do. There's a law against that, or there's, you know, or I, you know, I'm, one time in 1940 there was a law against that. I'm gonna call and report.
Right.
And then the government agencies are designed to be complaint driven.
And you had that problem on Mount Spokane.
I did. I had a lot of problems with that on Mount Spokane. And then so then it's like the complaint is in, and then they have to process it, even if it's bullshit or true or anything.
Right.
They have to process it.
Sure.
And so then when they process it, they might come down and like give you grief, and maybe they'll find something else, or maybe they'll because when they come down but otherwise they would have never have bothered you at all.
Right.
So all I'm saying is that if it's boring on this side, they don't care. They're looking for interesting things.
Right.
Now, of course, from a permaculture perspective, there's a lot to be said, too, for like, hey, let's put a bunch of food on this side.
Yeah.
And people will see, but of course, around here, there's orchards everywhere, which, of course, drives me nuts.
Monoculture.
Yeah, monocrop of cherries.
Not, by the way. These are all different kinds of trees, just so you know.
Okay. Oh, good.
I think I'm ignoring your podcast. These are apricot, plum, peach, pear, apple, cherry. They're all different.
All different.
And raspberries, too.
All different. Well, you need to have your support stuff in here, too, and some legumes and whatnot. But, hey, that's another conversation.
Well, that's why I did. This is my prophetic attempt at a terrace. My thought was I would mix in some of those. And actually, last summer, we had a nice bunch of wildflowers growing here that, kind of brought in some more of the pollinators. But, it wasn't the optimum because I'm still learning what the heck I'm doing. But, we even mixed some of the different raspberries. Like, there's gold raspberries and red, and there was a lot of wildflowers. I'll probably add some legumes this year and some nitrogen fixing type stuff.
You need to get a seed mix put together, and whenever you turn any soil, whenever you open up any soil, you got to be throwing some of your seed mix down on it.
Yeah.
So we, at some point maybe we should talk about that.
Yeah. I actually bought some the other day at one of the nurseries. It was like a wildflower seed mix, but it had like lupin and some of the stuff that Seth grows that I thought might, add some.
You should probably put together your own seed mix that's going to contain a lot of good permaculture stuff.
Right.
Not only a bunch of legumes, mm-hmm. Maybe even some edible legumes.
Right.
Some daikon radish, some buckwheat.
Yeah.
Things that make really good support plants. I was kind of thinking earlier today, I took a picture. Skeeter was handing out his seed mix that he uses as general purpose seed mix for anything and everything, and I was just kind of thinking, well, what would be smart to put into every seed mix is mullein.
Yeah, you mentioned that the other day on the other property. There's that's one of the pioneering plants that basically helps improve your soil. It's kind of a martyr plant. It basically improves the soil and dies.
Yeah, and as long as the soil conditions are good and other things are growing, it just doesn't do anything. It just hangs out and it doesn't germinate or something. I'm not sure what.
Interesting.
But it seems to not come up.
By the way, you mentioned that about that plant, the mullein, the other day. I noticed I've got some growing in the back little terrace that I made there, too.
Yeah, let it go.
I didn't plant it. It just came up on its own.
It's doing its job because you got bare soil there, and so it's trying to cure that.
Here's a little bear trying to get
So you got a bear. Thanks.
Mangled my net. Mangled the fence that was protecting my pear tree here.
Well, I bought a couple of cast iron pots. Hopefully we can persuade Sepp to make bone sauce, and then we could put a little bone sauce on this.
Does bone sauce work for bears, too? I thought it only worked for deer.
My understanding is that nothing wants anything to do with it.
Probably so. I know bears are very sensitive, have a very sensitive sense of smell. So my guess is if it's that nasty and the deer don't like it, the bear won't either. So
is this the tree of question? Okay.
A really great cherry. It's actually I believe it's a sour cherry, although it's a very sweet tasting sour cherry, but it produced prolifically, and this is one of the first trees that I think my mom had planted it years ago. Of course, we're a little upset that it's right in the middle of our football field here, soccer field, but in any case, it produced really prolifically delicious cherries. And then we noticed starting last summer that after it had been the cherries were getting ripe for a while, we noticed that on some of the cherries, not all but some, there was this little white worm. In fact, I'm sure I ate a handful of them before I noticed that I was chomping on the white worm. And I think I talked to you about that. You said that's actually kind of fly that I think it lives like 30 days and it pupates in the ground and flies up, lays its eggs in the cherries. But I've heard that once that cycle starts, it can be a difficult cycle to stop. So my question to you is, what kind of natural remedies could we initiate to help break that cycle and make sure that I'm not eating worms
while I'm eating my cherries. All right. I think that the worms are an indicator that that you suck as a tree care person.
that's probably true. I'm doing a trial. You know, this is a trial and error learning experience here. I'm sure I'm doing a lot of things wrong. So maybe I don't have any crop at all. But
so I'm trying to think of analogies, and nothing's coming to my mind, mostly because I think I'm hungry.
You want your own
stead. I'm thinking about that pie.
Yeah, that pie.
Yeah, and so. All right, I see a ton of problems here, and it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, no, Mother Nature is saying, Bill, you fucked up. I got to take this tree out just to fix things and make things right.
Right.
And so, first of all, tell me about the white stuff right there. I know what it is, but I want to hear, I want to get a verbal representation into the podcast.
Why do I have a feeling I'm about to be a punching bag here? That's okay. For the sake of the podcast audience out there, so this is a tree that we kind of, you know, planted and forgot about, more or less, other than when you walk by and grab a cherry. But what Paul's talking about is there is a white trunk protector, which actually came with the tree when we bought it. And because we're not up here all the time, you know, it just got left on there. And the tree trunk is actually outgrown, and it's actually splitting open and has split open. On top of that, I know from talking to several people that although they put these white trunk protectors on to kind of protect the trunk from getting scorched in the winter when the sun hits one side of the snow and reflects off and can burn one side of the trunk and not the other. On the other hand, we shouldn't leave it on all the time because I've heard it can provide kind of a moist environment for bugs and so forth. So bottom line is the obvious thing is that the tree has outgrown the trunk protector. It almost looks like there might even be a little bit of bark damage right there, trunk damage.
From the protector. That's right. The protector's fucking up the tree.
And you look at that.
It's not fucking it up a lot, but it's fucking it up a little.
Yeah, it definitely leaves a lot to be desired. And you can tell, actually, where the trunk has been. It's starting to split apart now. The bark looks the worst right there. And then up here where the trunk is not, or you know, down here, it actually looks a lot better. So that would actually be my first clue. That
I suppose when it started, all of the trunk protector was probably within 12 inches of the soil.
Yes.
How high up is that one piece there?
Well, this piece is probably 4 feet or so, or more, 4.5 feet or something.
Yeah, 4.5 feet is what I would go with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been embarrassingly negligent of this tree, I guess you could say.
I think that the important point I want to stress here is the tree protector is fucking up the tree. That can't be emphasized enough. I mean, it's not like killing the tree, but it's making the tree sad.
Yeah.
So, and basically, once you start to make the tree sad, then the tree kind of goes, which is the call
for the worms. It's
the dinner bell for all kinds of bugs and funguses. It's like once the tree starts to kind of get a little sad, everything else is like it's time to chow down. Let's move in and take this thing out. That's their job. This is their job to notice when a tree is in stress,
right.
And it's the end of the tree's life cycle.
Nature breaks it down and starts to do its work. So I guess it's safe to say then that our neglect of this tree is, you know, is basically invited the worms, and the worms just didn't show for no reason. The tree, to use a human analogy, the tree's immune system, for lack of a better word, would be better if I had done
your,
a better job.
Your first thought, which I think is a normal human thought, is it's got worms. I want those worms to fucking die. And I will kill them. I'm going to get little teeny tiny machine guns, and I'm going to sit out here and shoot all the little fucking worms because I hate them so. And they're my enemy. But actually, you know, the worms are trying to help you out, man.
They are.
And yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
They
you
give me a clue
you made a mistake. They're trying to erase your mistake.
I see.
All right?
Okay.
They're trying to cover for you. Look, Bill, I know you're not around. I'm going to try and cover for you.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I'll take this out. And then nobody will know.
Right.
All right, you could call it a fluke, whatever you want. All right, now let's how far out do the roots extend from this tree?
Well, I don't know because they're under
okay.
Dress, but I'm
all right. Okay, that's called the drip line.
Okay.
We call that the drip line.
The drip
all right,
line? Yeah.
Here, let me show you. the roots come out to about here.
Really?
All right. Yeah. The roots for that cherry. So we're standing about three or four times past the drip line on this tree. Now another thing is what's the general shape of this tree?
Lollipop.
Lollipop tree. We got a lollipop on our hands, folks. So all right, we got a lollipop tree, and it's got like 5 feet of trunk before it just has a shrub.
Yeah.
And so basically, when the leaves come out, it's got to come up with enough sugar to support all that trunk.
Right.
And now let's talk about like okay, so we're standing over the roots here. Here we're standing over the roots. So like when the roots are out there and they're enjoying life, what's out there enjoying life with those roots?
Grass and a lot of it.
What else?
Well.
Okay, here, let me help you out. Not much fucking else.
Yeah, there's no pollen.
I am not seeing a dandelion. I'm not seeing any other plant in this grass. Why is that, Bill?
Well, there's no guild. Obviously, the grass has taken over. There's no other supporting or companion plants to help support the tree and provide a symbiotic environment.
I'm a little more worried than that, Bill. Why is there not a dandelion right here? Why is it in all of this lawn I don't see a single dandelion? Now, earlier today, I'm just a few miles down the road. There's dandelions everywhere.
Yeah.
They've got dandelions. They've got knapweed. They got gobs of species with the grass.
You know what? I think that my mom did have this sprayed for knapweed a while ago because we had a big knapweed problem. And, of course, this was a couple years ago before I had heard the word permaculture and knew anything about, you know.
Okay.
So I think that's probably why.
All right. Yeah. So then that spray, that kills broadleaf plants, right? That's a broadleaf, because the idea is it kills the broadleaves,
yep,
and then it leaves the grasses,
right?
Okay. Would you call a cherry tree a grass?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. So what do you suppose is going to happen when you spray it with herbicides?
This is like the Socratic method of...
You're suffering, aren't you? You're suffering. But you ask...
No,
you ask me the questions, and I keep telling people, you don't want me to come and tell you, and then it's like, okay, well, what did you think was going to happen?
Oh, it's true. It's true. And it's magnified by the fact that, you know, maybe if I spent more time up here, I would notice some of these patterns, but, you know, we're here and then we're gone. And so.
Ooh, I just had a really important thought.
What's up?
Are you still going to buy me dinner?
I don't know. That's how bad.
That's how long this goes on.
How bad is that?
Because I got more. I got lots more. You want to keep going? Or,
I'll still buy you dinner.
Or do you want to leave it here?
Listen, I need to humble myself and realize that, you know, the truth is, we have to know the truth, even if the truth makes us uncomfortable. So the truth is that you're pointing out some obvious flaws in how I've cared for this tree. So, no, please continue.
Okay.
I'm going to be a punching bag to solve the problem and save...
All right, here it comes. Here comes the next one. All right. Knapweed. Now, here's the thing.
Cut me, Nick.
Here's the thing. When people say, oh, look at that knapweed there. I better spray the knapweed.
Yeah.
And then here comes the people are like, oh, hey, let me tell you. I got an herbicide here that's way better than those other herbicides. You don't want to spend your money on that. I got an herbicide. You spray it. It lasts like 5 or 6 years. I mean, you don't have to spray it. Ain't that a deal? Don't you want some of that?
You know, and again, I'm not even 100% sure my mom had ordered that, but I thought she had because some of the neighbors changed knapweed issues. So
all you got to do is look at the ground and know that something was ordered.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's only grass here.
Yeah, it's a nice lawn.
It's nice lawn as a monocrop goes.
Right.
So now, all right, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
Do you think your mom sprayed 2 years ago, or did she spray last year?
Probably 2 years ago, I think it was. I'm not even 100% sure. I thought I remember her saying something about that. She was, and even my mom was uncomfortable with it, but all the so-called experts said,
right,
you know, yeah, because my mom was an organic farmer growing up, and I think since she figured this is, you know, lawn, and we're going to plant on the perimeter, okay.
Right. I don't know how many places I've been where they swear by organic. They are passionate about organic. They're bonkers about organic. They want to kill anybody who doesn't organic.
Yeah.
And then you ask them about what they've done themselves, and it's like, I am, of course, absolutely organic, except, of course, when I spray stuff.
For knapweed.
Like herbicides and pesticides. I am organic to the core, except when there's those hornets over there, and I get that stuff, that Raid, sprayed in. And it's like, I am totally organic, except for that time, though, that hawkweed was there, and I just didn't know what else to fucking do, so I just sprayed it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's like, but I am organic, I swear, organic to the core. And it's like, yeah. Oh, and I think like, you know, a lot of people, it's like, okay, they did know what organic was, and then it's like, you know what, I just don't care anymore.
Right.
It's like, you know, I just letting it go. But I do care, Bill. I'm here to care all over you until you weep. I will care until you weep. All right, so so basically, here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a persistent herbicide all over your property now, and I know you are loving the permaculture. You are about to bust. You are so excited about permaculture.
Yeah.
And now I'm here to bear the bad news.
I'm screwed.
It could be hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to have some challenges because you're going to try and plant stuff in this soil, and everything is going to die.
Yeah.
And so here's your cherry tree. It's like, what did you say your mom's 2 years ago? And it's like, damn, and last year this thing just put out shit cherries, and everything was miserable. The tree was miserable. It got all these worms and shit. And you know, when you spray it, what kind of death do you think these plants have? I mean, granted, most of them are compromised immediately, but a tree is a much bigger thing. So basically, it got hit with the herbicides, but it's like it didn't kill it. It wasn't enough to kill it because
right.
It's a bigger beast here.
The trees, yeah.
So, all right, so there's that.
So what can I do to remedy the herbicide situation? Is there anything I can do to kind of purify the ground once that crap's been sprayed on there?
I think you start with a lot of weeping. You know, just cry. No, this is, I mean, it does what they advertise.
Yeah.
It persists.
What if I move the perimeter?
The things that you can do are, like, worse. I mean, the things you can do to try and remedy it are pretty devastating.
Really?
You know, it's like you could till this, all of this, and utterly destroy the roots on this plant.
Mm-hmm.
You could till it several times, like 20.
Yeah.
Because it does succumb to UV radiation.
It does.
UV radiation does the trick. But then you got to think about it. It's like if you go and you till, you'll expose 1%. And then you till again, you'll expose another 1%.
Right.
And then you till again, you'll expose another 1%. But every time you till, you lose 30% of your organic.
Right?
So you're gonna turn all of this into cement, really. It'll be like cob, like making a little cob house. Whoa, lightning. We're going to hear thunder.
Yeah, we will. That'll add to the soundtrack.
Yeah, everybody count.
There you go.
There it is.
That means it's not too close, though, right?
So we're I don't know.
Hey, you're taller than me, so if we get some lighting,
it'll hit me first.
If I see your hair standing up, I'm hitting the ground.
How tall are you?
6'2".
6'2", yeah. You do look kind of small from here.
Yeah, yeah. No, I normally...
And you're a football player, right?
Ex-football player, yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay. Now you were... I was asking you about what all is growing around the roots of this tree, and you were on to something. And I did have a higher priority.
Yeah.
But like, let's pretend. Let's enter Mr. Rogers' Land of Make Believe. Did you ever see that show?
No.
Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Rogers. I watched the Eddie Murphy skit on it on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
But I never watched the actual show.
Okay. Well, the Eddie Murphy skit on it isn't going to cover this. Well, let's pretend for a moment that that you didn't already kill the tree with herbicides.
Okay.
All right.
You say my trade is unsalvageable?
This will be a mental exercise. No, I think it's possible it'll be salvageable, but it's going to be sad for a few years.
Yeah.
Because the herbicide could have a half-life of anywhere from 7 to 11 years.
Wow.
And so they say it lasts 5 years. That's because, you know, you're supposed to spray it just the right amount. And
right.
What they really want you to do is to spray it and then come back and buy more and do it again.
Right.
So they'll tell you to put down this tiny, tiny amount, which will do the trick for about 5 years because it's dropped down that low.
Right.
And then after about 5 years, you'll start seeing some weeds come back, but not the full arsenal.
Right.
And then they want you to come and buy more.
Right.
So,
don't buy more, okay?
Okay.
All right. All right. I'm glad we had this chat.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're here. That's why.
All right. I think we can save this tree. You know, let's start by getting rid of this white stuff, which is see, now look at the bark underneath it. Oh, that is just disgusting. I don't like these tree protectors.
Yeah.
Ever.
Just protect the trunk and look at that. I mean, I wish the podcast people could actually see a picture of this, because the trunk is actually pretty solid where the protector wasn't, and where the protector was, it just looks sad, in your words.
This is not good.
Hey, by the way, look at this, Paul. Is that another branch going out right there?
It could be, and if it does, let it come out, okay? Because this thing needs that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That would be cool if that's what it was. All right, let's talk about, you're starting down the path of guilds. Well, first of all, I think, you know, one thing is, like, let's suppose right here where we're standing. So we're standing a little ways away from the current drip line.
Uh-huh.
What if you build a hugel culture bed, like, right here? Because then the thing is, we're far enough away that we're not going, because if you were to plant a hugel culture bed too close,
mm-hmm.
you could suffocate a lot of the roots for the tree. But if you
built
it far enough away, then the tree's roots could go up inside the hugel culture bed and go,
no insecticide later.
No, now I feel so good. I think I will fight the fucking worms myself.
Right.
You know?
I'm with you, man.
All right, so there's a little bit of that.
Right.
Then you were starting to talk about guilds. You were starting to talk about, so you're right. There's, I mean, because basically grass and trees do not get on well.
Yeah.
Because you transplanted this tree, you fucker.
Yeah.
You killed off its taproot.
Right.
And so it doesn't have a taproot anymore. So all its roots are up close to the surface where all the grass roots are.
And where all the poison is from the knapweed.
Yeah.
That was real smart, wasn't it?
You killed its polyculture. You killed its guild. It had this guild going. Granted, the knapweed wasn't going to be very good for it.
Yeah.
But the dandelions and whatnot. In fact, I think it would be funny to tell your mom, guess what? I planted dandelions all over the lawn.
I want to be there when you do that. Hey, my mom actually is on board with this stuff. You know, you're basically talking to city slickers here that just have zero knowledge, and that's why, you know, that's why we've been listening to your stuff, trying to get up to speed so we could, you know. It's kind of like my brother and I took this wilderness survival course once, and after this, like, six-week-long course, a couple times a week, my brother looked at me and said, you know, before I took this course, I think if I was alone in the wilderness, I'd probably be dead in about 3 days, and now I'd be dead in about 5 days. So we're basically, that's kind of where we're at. We're not as bad as we used to be, but we got a long way to go.
Okay.
So.
All right. So you want to plant your nitrogen-fixing plants. You want to have a mix of stuff.
Legumes or, like, what would you recommend for?
Everybody wants me to make a list. It gets hard. Okay, I see ants on your tree, too.
Yeah.
No, that's an earwig.
Oh. Is he good or bad?
I wouldn't want him, but there's only one. I've seen a bunch of ants. And I would want to just observe the tree when the leaves start to come out,
uh-huh.
see if you can find out where the ants are going.
And put some diatomaceous earth there.
Well, let's first observe, and then let's see what's going on. What's the haps, ants? What's going on? What are you doing here?
By the way, you see how just luscious these cherries were? That you pick a cherry off, and the seed would stay on there a lot of times. It would pull right off. It was so moist and sweet, and that's why there's some seeds still hanging on here from last year. Which, by the way, I can start the seed, right? You start a new cherry tree from that? Could I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you could. You might not like the taste of the cherries, but, you know, okay. It would be a cherry tree.
Yeah.
All right, let's okay, the legumes. All right, let me pick one.
Sea berry, okay.
A shrub. I would go with a shrub or two.
Okay.
You know, comfrey. Because comfrey is going to pull up, it's going to shoot down the taproot, which, of course, this tree doesn't have.
Right.
And hopefully, through, in fact, I would even try and think about a little bit of wood chip action here, or even branches on the ground around it.
Okay.
With the idea that build the fungal soils in there.
That organic matter is going to break down and soil.
And maybe smother some grasses.
Yeah.
You know, if it starts to rain, I have to shut this thing off and tuck it away. All right. So we would want to plant lots of dandelions, lots of comfrey, and then of course your nitrogen fixers. Because the tree is already so high up and there's so much grass here, mm-hmm. I kind of wonder about maybe planting some sweet clover, and because it'll like go shrimp up high.
Provide a natural kind of protective base around the trunk or some.
And then if you chop and drop it, you can, you know, lay down mulch.
Right, right.
Or it'll eventually lay itself down.
Right.
Eventually. Oh, here comes the rain. And so there it is. Does that seem like enough information about your tree?
Yeah, no. So you give me a nice little gilt to plant around it. Next step, maybe even do a hookah culture bed around the drip line or a little outside the drip line.
I firmly place the blame on not nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on me. So I think if I did these things, the trees, basically the tree's immune system, for lack of a better analogy, would kind of protect itself from these worms, and I wouldn't have to do anything else.
Oh, yeah, just the general vibrance and strength of the tree. A good, healthy tree does not get bugs and stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Let me ask you one last question, because I know it's about the rain.
It's raining now.
And I know you want your huckleberry milkshake, but notice this tree is kind of dense in here, too. Would you recommend thinning it out a little bit, a little more air in the center of the trunk, or like trimming off some of the, I mean, it's, you know, or would you recommend just leaving it as is?
I mean, okay, so there's some branch crossing in there that I think would eventually need to go, but so far, like right now, the tree is already stressed.
Uh-huh.
I would say I would attempt to not stress it at this point with something like pruning.
Okay.
Because there's really, it's a young enough tree, there's not a lot of branches here to begin with.
Right.
So, like, and that's what I see with a lot of these trees. I kind of wonder, like, they look like they're old, but they're not particularly large.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is going to have a lot to do with a lot of the things we just discussed.
Right.
So,
yeah, the same thing we talked about here could apply to these over here, these trees over here. That putting little guilds around it.
Yeah, you're going to be working to make the best of it. Yeah, good luck. anything else?
Well, have you seen instances where a tree has been a little sick like this one, and then people have initiated some of these changes, add the guilds, add the hookah culture around it, and seen the tree recover? And if so, how long did it take for the tree to recover?
I'm going to say yes. And at the same time, yes. And so the first thing that pops into my mind is this pear tree that I had. I'm always experimenting. And so I had these two pear trees that I just moved onto the land, and they both had pear leaf blister mite really bad.
Right.
And this was long before I heard the word permaculture. And so I looked up the organic solution and says, you know, spray sulfur.
Oh,
spray
yeah.
sulfur
yeah.
is the organic solution. And I kind of thought, I want to do the vibrancy thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I ended up doing. I did the sulfur treatment on one of the pear trees, and on the other pear tree, I just gave it a foliar feed, and I mulched it.
Mm-hmm.
And just some hay mulch. The tree with the foliar feed and the mulch, it was like a week later, I could not find a pear leaf blister mite.
Really?
And the other tree continued to suffer.
Wow.
So, you know, and which seems weird because with the pear leaf blister mite, the leaf is blistered.
I've seen
There's
that,
a
yeah.
blister on the leaf, and so it's like, where did the blister go?
Yeah. We had a little bit of that fungus on one of the pear trees we had, just a little bit on some of the leaves, not all of them. And I ended up just cutting those leaves off, which, you know, because it supposedly spreads pretty easy, but obviously I got to address the underlying condition that created it in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, that's just that fungus, that's just Mother Nature saying, you know, I'm coming in here doing my job.
And I'm hungry for something. You're not giving me something I need, basically.
You're screwing something up somewhere, and so I'm here to fix things to make you look good.
Right.
You know, because that's what I do. I'm Mother Nature. I bring it, you know.
Bring them
and,
up.
And you push the button, and I arrived.
Right.
You said, Mother Nature, take this tree out. So I showed up. I'm taking it out.
Right.
You know. Hey, here's an idea. Don't push that button.
Right.
If you want the tree to stay, don't push the button, okay?
Right.
Can we go eat now? Because I'm hungry.
Yes, we can go.
All right.
Thanks for the advice, by the way.
You can thank me with pie.
It's coming.
All right. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about tree care, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.
What a bad gardener Bill is.